All right, everyone, get ready, because today we're going deep into international arbitration.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah, it's where businesses from different countries, well, they settle their disagreements.
Instead of going to court.
Exactly. No courtrooms, no juries. It's a level playing field with rules everyone agrees to beforehand.
Sounds much more civilized.
Right. And speaking of rules, we're going to break down two of the biggest ones. The ICDR International Arbitration Rules.
Those are the IAR for short.
You got it. We'll be comparing them to the AAA Commercial Arbitration Rules. Those are known as CAR.
IAR and CAR, got it.
Now, just in case you're wondering, ICDR stands for the International Center for Dispute Resolution.
And AAA is the American Arbitration Association.
You know your stuff.
Well, I try to keep up.
Okay, so both of these rule books, they're all about making things fair and efficient.
But they have different approaches, and those differences can really affect your strategy if you're in a dispute. So it's important to know what you're getting into.
Okay, first up, timelines. IIR seems to get that international disputes can be, well, a little complicated.
Like a long international flight.
Yeah. Lots of moving parts, potential delays, and you don't want to rush things.
Under IIR, a respondent gets a whole 30 days to answer a claim.
Oh, wow. That's a lot more time than I thought.
And then there's up to 60 days after all the hearings to issue the final award.
60 days. So I guess if you're a company and you need things resolved ASAP to avoid, you know, disruptions.
This is something to really consider.
Yeah. Time is money, as they say.
Exactly. Now, CAR, on the other hand.
This is the other set of rules.
Right. CAR is more like a high-speed train zipping between cities. Everything moves much faster.
How fast are we talking?
The answer has to be given within 14 days.
Okay. That is fast.
And the award usually comes out within 30 days.
Wow. So CAR is all about speed.
It can be a huge plus in terms of cost and efficiency,
right,
but it might not be the right fit for every single case.
It's like choosing how you want to travel, right? Scenic route with time to prepare or a fast track to get things done?
You got it. The best choice depends on the specific dispute and what's important to the people involved.
Makes sense. All right, let's move on to something else interesting. How each rule book tackles applicable laws and remedies.
Ah, yes, the legal stuff.
IIR is very global in its thinking. It knows you can't just assume everyone follows the same legal playbook.
So it lays out how to deal with those tricky conflicts of law.
Very important when you have parties from totally different legal systems.
Absolutely. IIR also lets arbitrators take into account trade practices and gives guidance on things like currency changes and interest calculations.
So IIR tries to head off those little details that could become big problems later on.
Smart.
And here's something I found really interesting. IIR specifically excludes punitive damages.
Meaning?
It's focused on making the injured party whole, not punishing the one who did wrong.
Interesting approach. So IIR is all about clear boundaries and knowing what to expect. What about CAR? Different approach.
Tell us.
Well, CAR doesn't have those specific conflict of law rules. It's more flexible when deciding remedies, including something called equitable relief.
Equitable relief. What is that?
It gives arbitrators more freedom to come up with a solution that's fair, even if it goes beyond just money.
So if a company wants a specific outcome, like a change in how the other company does business or a public apology, CAR's flexibility might be more appealing.
Exactly. But it also means there's more uncertainty about the final outcome, which some might not like.
A trade-off, then.
You could say that predictability versus flexibility, it depends what your priorities are.
All right, let's switch gears and talk about information exchange.
Discovery, as the lawyers call it.
Right. I hear that can be a real sticking point in international disputes.
Oh, it can be. The U.S. is known for its broad discovery process, but that's not the norm everywhere.
Right.
Both IIR and CAR try to streamline things, but they do it differently.
So what are the big differences?
Well, both allow for document requests, but IIR is strict about keeping those requests limited to what's really needed.
Okay.
It says no to things like depositions and interrogatories.
Those long question and answer sessions.
Exactly.
So with IIR, you got to be strategic with what information you ask for.
Yeah.
No fishing expeditions allowed.
You got it. IIR is all about efficiency and focusing on the main issues.
Gotcha. And how about CAR? A bit looser.
A little, especially in those mega complex commercial disputes. You know, the ones over $500,000.
$500,000. Yikes.
Depositions might be okay in certain cases, but only if the arbitrator says so.
The CAR knows that sometimes you need a little wiggle room to get to the truth. Especially when there's a lot on the line.
Exactly. Finding the right balance between efficiency and thoroughness.
Okay, so timelines, remedies, discovery. What other surprises do these rule books have for us?
Well, one area where IRR and QR go in totally different directions is how they deal with witness statements.
Oh, right. Something about that rang a bell. Can you remind us what the key differences are?
Sure. Both allow for written witness statements, but IRR doesn't specifically mention cross-examination.
You mean that back-and-forth questioning in U.S. courts?
Yeah.
Wait, so under IRR, you might not get to grill the other side's witnesses. That's kind of a big deal.
It can be. The tribunal can summon witnesses and decide how they'll be questioned, but it's not a guaranteed right like under IRR.
So with IRR, the arbitrators have a lot of power in shaping how things go.
Exactly. And that difference reflects how IRR is built to work with lots of legal traditions and cultural norms.
It's amazing how these little differences in the rules can have such a big impact on the whole arbitration process.
It really is like choosing different tools to build a house. Each tool has its purpose, and the right choice depends on what you're building.
So no one-size-fits-all in international arbitration?
Definitely not. You have to understand each rule book and choose the one that fits your goals and the specifics of your dispute.
Makes perfect sense. And that's why having expert help is so important when you're dealing with this stuff.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, this has been super insightful. We've uncovered some major differences between IRR and IRRR and how those differences affect things in international disputes.
But we've only scratched the surface. There's more to explore, like what these rule books have in common and what trends are shaping the world of international arbitration.
We'll dive into all of that right after this quick break. Stay tuned. And we're back, still diving deep into the world of international arbitration rules.
IAR and CIRR, those are our focus today.
You got it. And before the break, we were really getting into the details. You know how choosing between these rule books is a big deal.
Strategic decision, for sure.
Absolutely. So if you're facing an international dispute, what are some things you should think about when picking your set of rules?
Well, first you got to look at the heart of the dispute itself. What's the problem all about?
Okay, so like, is it a simple breach of contract or something way more complex?
Exactly. Is it intellectual property, maybe some tricky technical issue, or something totally different?
I see. So a straightforward contract case might do well with IRR, you know, those streamlined procedures we talked about.
Right, where things are predictable.
But a really complicated case might need CRR and its flexibility and its wider discovery options.
You're getting it. Another thing to consider is the background of everyone involved, you know, their culture and legal expectations.
Oh, that's a good point. Different countries, different legal systems.
For sure. Parties from civil law systems where courts are less adversarial and discovery is limited might be more at ease with how IRR does things.
But someone from a common law system like the U.S.?
They might prefer the familiar features of CRR, like depositions and more intense cross-examination.
Right, because that's what they're used to.
It's all about finding that middle ground between international best practices and what parties are comfortable with from their own legal world.
It's like these rule books are translating between different legal cultures.
They really are, helping to make things fair for everyone involved.
I love that. And as international arbitration keeps evolving, I bet we'll see even more of that, you know, more sophistication and nuance in how the rules adapt to global business.
Definitely. Speaking of evolution, what trends do you see coming up in international arbitration? What's on the horizon?
Ooh, good question.
Well, one big thing, especially after all the global stuff that's happened, is technology taking a bigger role in these proceedings.
Yeah, video conferencing, online document sharing, virtual hearings are becoming pretty normal now.
Makes things much easier and no more jet lag.
Exactly.
What else?
We're also seeing a growing focus on specialized expertise in these tribunals.
What does that mean?
Well, disputes are getting more complex, so people want arbitrators who really know their stuff.
Makes sense.
Industry knowledge, technical expertise that can really help in understanding and fairly judging a case.
So it's not enough to just find a neutral party anymore.
Right. They need to understand the language of the industry and all the technical details.
Gotcha. And this trend of specialization, I bet that'll just keep growing as international arbitration goes into new and super technical areas.
You're right. Areas like intellectual property, cybersecurity, even environmental law.
So the future of international arbitration, it's going to be all about high tech and specialized knowledge. It seems that way. And for anyone doing business across borders, it's super important to keep up with these changes and find experts who can guide them through all the complexities.
Experts like yourself.
I try my best.
So after really digging into these rule books, is there anything that surprised you or that you find especially interesting?
You know what I find fascinating? It's how both IAR and CARFR, even though they're different, they both really care about fairness and efficiency.
I see what you mean.
This shows up in stuff like emergency arbitration, expedited procedures, even incorporating mediation, if that works better for the parties.
Yeah, they're both trying to find solutions.
And they both have solid processes for picking arbitrators, making sure they're impartial, dealing with any conflicts of interest.
So even with different approaches, they both want to create a level playing field where disputes can be resolved fairly and efficiently.
Exactly. And I think that shared goal, that's what makes international arbitration so valuable for solving these cross-border disagreements.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about how they're different. What about IRR specifically? Anything unique about it that makes it stand out in the international world?
There are a few things. IRR has some provisions you won't see in CERR that really highlight its international focus.
Oh, tell me more.
Well, for instance, it allows something called joinder.
Joinder. What's that?
It means you can bring an extra party into an existing arbitration case.
So, like, if you have a project with contractors and subcontractors and suppliers all from different countries and there's a dispute, IRR lets you bring everyone to the table together.
Exactly. It leads to a more complete resolution and you avoid the hassle of having separate arbitrations.
Smart. Anything else?
IRR also has a provision for consolidation.
Consolidation, is that like merging two companies?
No, it's different. Consolidation means you can take multiple arbitrations, even if they're from different agreements, and combine them into one big proceeding.
So if two companies have multiple contracts and there are disputes under a few of them, they can resolve everything at once instead of having separate cases.
Right. It saves time, money, and paperwork.
I like it. So joinder and consolidation. These are just two examples of how IIR is made to handle those tricky situations that come up in international disputes.
Exactly.
So CERR leans more towards a U.S. view of arbitration, while IRR has a wider, more global perspective.
You could say that. And there are even more interesting details. Remember, we talked about language barriers being a problem in international disputes.
Right, like that time I tried to order a pizza in Italy using only hand gestures and my terrible Italian.
Well, IRR actually has provisions about the language used in the arbitration. It considers the language of the contract, what the parties prefer, and the practical realities of the case.
So IRR is like a language referee, making sure everyone understands each other and avoiding misunderstanding.
That's a great way to put it. And speaking of potential problems, IRR also has a provision on legal privilege, which can be a real mess in international cases.
Different countries, different rules, different interpretations.
It's like solving a puzzle where the pieces are from different puzzles.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But IRR gives a framework for dealing with this. The tribunal has to consider the relevant principles of privilege and try to apply them consistently to all parties, no matter what their home country's rules say.
So again, IRR is all about making things fair, even when dealing with something as complex as legal privilege.
That's the goal, to find that balance between respecting national laws and ensuring fairness for everyone in the arbitration.
It's really well designed. Like, it anticipated problems and came up with solutions ahead of time.
That's what contributes to IRR's strong reputation in the international arbitration world.
Well, this has been eye-opening. We've learned so much about the strategy involved in choosing between IRR and CAUR. But before we finish up, I have one big question. With international arbitration changing so much, what do you think the future holds for these rule books? Will they become more similar or will they stay different?
That's the million-dollar question, and one that experts are debating right now.
Ooh, so what are the possibilities?
Well, some folks think we'll see these rule books become more alike.
Like merging together.
Kind of. As the global business world pushes for things to be more uniform, you know, more predictable in international arbitration.
I can see that. Making things simpler, especially for newcomers.
Right. A more standardized approach means less uncertainty, makes it easier for companies to plan their strategies.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But I guess there are also reasons to keep them separate.
Right. For sure. Some argue that different regions, different industries will always have unique needs and expectations.
So they'll need different rules.
Exactly. Think about it. A tech startup in Silicon Valley versus, say, a big construction project in the Middle East.
Totally different situations.
Right. A one-size-fits-all approach might not be the best or fairest solution for every case.
So it sounds like the future of these rule books is still up in the air.
It is. And that's what makes it so interesting. International arbitration is always changing, always adapting to the realities of global business.
It's a fascinating world to watch unfold.
It really is.
Well, after this deep dive, I feel like I've learned so much about how these rule books work and the choices involved in picking one.
I'm glad to hear that.
So what are some key takeaways you hope our listeners will remember?
Well, first off, understanding the ins and outs of IRR and SAR-R can give you a real edge in international disputes.
An advantage.
Exactly. It's not just about knowing the rules. It's about knowing how to use them strategically to get the result you want.
So it's like having a roadmap and a compass for navigating international arbitration.
I love that analogy. Another crucial takeaway is that getting expert advice is really important. International arbitration is complex, and having experienced counsel can make a world of difference in reaching a good outcome.
It's like having a guide leading you through a jungle. They know the safe paths, the dangers, how to get you to your destination.
That's a great way to put it. And finally, I hope listeners realize that international arbitration is always evolving.
It never stands still.
Exactly. Staying informed about new developments, trends, changes to the rules, that's key to staying ahead of the game.
It's like anything else in life. Continuous learning is crucial for success.
You got it. And that brings us to the end of our deep dive into the world of international arbitration rules.
It's been a wild ride. We've uncovered the key differences between IRR and SAR-R, explored the strategies for choosing between them, and even looked ahead to what the future holds for this field.
I've enjoyed sharing my insights with you and our listeners.
It's been a pleasure having you. And to all our listeners out there, thank you for joining us on this journey into international arbitration. We encourage you to keep learning about this important area of law.
Knowledge is power, as they say, especially when it comes to resolving complex international disputes.
Well said. Until next time, keep those brains buzzing and keep diving deep into the world of knowledge.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.